You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 26th of November 2025 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I've got an interesting article to look at today, which is interesting for a couple of reasons. I'll just read you the title here. Public servants have been handed new guidance to protect new migrants from high-risk narratives. And it's taken from GB News. And it's about the government instructing their civil service and others to look through social media posts and identify what they call high-risk narratives, which is interesting enough. But they also talk about a department of government called the Government Communications Service. And this government communications service, after you look into it, appears to be the British version of the Ministry of Truth. Remember in America, there was going to be a Ministry of Truth and it was shut down because it caused absolute public uproar about this government department that was going to be deciding what was the truth and what isn't. Well, this government communications service says that it's supporting ministers' priorities, enabling effective operation of public services and improving people's lives. And basically, they are the ones deciding what is the truth and what isn't. They've won an award, government and public sector award, in that category rather, at the National AI Awards for Artificial Intelligence. They've been going for 1 year. They say they're celebrating 1 year of innovating with impact. And they're popular topics. They have the Wall of Beliefs. The Wall of Beliefs is a toolkit for understanding false beliefs and developing effective counter-disinformation strategies. So they're the ones that are the truth. They are the arbiters of truth. Everybody else that doesn't go along with it, they are disinformation. This is the new term for voices that are critical of government policy, is that they are disinformation. And this group, the Government Communications Service, works with another organization called Storitzi. And this is an AI startup. It says it's an information manipulation detection and OSINT investigation tool. Storitzi's platform empowers investigators to detect information manipulation and retrieve intelligence from open sources. So they're the ones that are going to detect if information has been manipulated. And what they mean by that is if you are using statistics to back up your point, and the statistics may have been intended for use in something else. For example, the David Lammy report, which I often quote, and the David Lammy report looks at the disproportionate representation of black and minority ethnic males in the prison system. And it says that that is because of racism, because the judge is racist, the police are racist, and everybody is racist. That's why there are a disproportionate number of young black males in the prison system. Whereas I would suggest that what those figures show is that a disproportionate number of young black males commit violent acts, the same as a disproportionate number of males of all races commit violent acts. If you're a man, you're more likely to commit a violent act than a woman, more likely to be found guilty of a crime than a woman. It's not because society is anti-male. Society is anti-male, but it isn't responsible for that. So I would use David Lammy's statistics from his report, and I would quote his report to show that this disproportionate amount of crime that's carried out by black and minority ethnics, whereas this organization here They would say that that was information manipulation. I was manipulating the information. Whereas it's not information manipulation, it's just presenting the facts and coming to an alternative conclusion from the facts. This organization, Storitzi, they have 2 million sources, 165,000 of them are categorized in 51 languages, and they have millions of data points instantly actionable for the detection of informational threats. And they say sourcing and categorization on Storitzi's platform, websites, channels, and social network accounts constitute what we call sources. Storitzi's unique feature is to provide its clients with content published by 2 million sources along with their associated data. More than 68,000 of these sources are categorized as unreliable, thanks to a combined effort by AI and humans. A total of 165,000 sources are categorized in the 51 languages covered. So, and they're the ones that they say are reliable, academic, NGOs, it has in the same sentence. So they're literally saying that non-governmental organizations are reliable sources. Of course, one NGO that jumps out at me is Syrian Human Rights Watch, which was based, I think, on the south coast of England, and had never even been to Syria, that was reporting on the supposed human rights offences that were carried out in Syria. We know about these NGOs. They go into countries like Belarus and Russia, and they try and foment rebellion. I would hardly say that they were reliable sources. I would say they're probably the most unreliable sources. Yet according to this Storitzi company that the government use, they're reliable sources. And you have to wonder whether they have the BBC down as a reliable source after it was caught faking a speech from Donald Trump, making a fake speech up out of two separate speeches. I mean, it was just unbelievable when that happened. There was MPs in the British Parliament talking about how in this climate of disinformation that we live and fake news, it is absolutely essential that we have the BBC. Did they miss what had happened? Did they miss that the BBC had been caught making the fake news? The BBC are the ones responsible for this climate of disinformation and fake news. Based on that, and that is just one of many. So this article, which we're going to talk about now, it includes both of these organizations. And I thought, well, I'll just look them up to find some background information on them. So this is where the government get their information. This is where they say what is disinformation and what is not comes from this organization here. So whatever the NGOs say, that's reliable information. Remember, Amnesty International won't have anything to do with political prisoners that are in prison for criticizing the government that used hate speech when criticizing the government. They refused to have anything to do with David Irving when he was jailed for journalism, basically, in Austria, or any of the other nationalist journalists. And yet, according to Storitzi, they would be taken as a reliable source of information. So we can see where these fake ideas come from. And they come from the very people that are claiming to be the arbiters of truth. Well, as I say, those two companies come up in this article today, which is titled, "Public servants have been handed new guidance to protect new migrants from high-risk narratives. Civil servants are trawling Britain's social media pages to monitor posts which raise concerns about migrants." Not illegitimate concerns, just any concerns. If you are concerned about having illegal immigrants hosted in a hotel or a multiple occupancy building near you, then you are one of the people here that they are interested in. You could be making a high-risk narrative. And what they mean by high-risk narrative is people that are complaining about the rapes that occur around these hotels, about the sexual harassment of children. People that point that out, the very fact that they are pointing it out, the government says, is a high-risk narrative. And their guidance is on how to protect new migrants, not on how to protect the children in the town with the migrant hotel in it from the migrants, but how to protect the migrants. As far as I'm aware, I haven't heard of any migrants being attacked, sexually abused, raped, or anything like that from the indigenous Britons. Yet we have had quite a lot of news stories about illegal immigrants stabbing people, murdering people, raping children, abusing children, abducting them, but we never seem to hear about that happening to the actual migrants. But the government is not concerned about that. They think that it's the migrants themselves that need protecting from the high-risk narratives, not the British people that need protecting from the migrant crime wave. The Cabinet Office manages the Government Communications Service, the GCS, a workforce of about 6,000 people. And that's the organisation that I was referring to earlier. As part of its role, the GCS has been tasked with preventing disinformation and crafting counter-narratives to protect the government's policy goals and reputation, the Telegraph reports. Now, these counter-narratives that they're producing, I would suggest that as well as monitoring people's social media posts to see what's actually being said on there, they would also have to have people putting out social media posts countering this and putting out a different narrative. And in order for them to have some credibility, it would have to not come directly from the government. So that, and that's probably what's being left out of this, is who is actually crafting these counter narratives. I mean, part of what this government communication service workforce actually do is come up with counter narratives. And the sort of counter narrative they might come up with is if somebody is saying that there is a disproportionate amount of child abuse that goes on with migrant men, and they might be talking about Afghans. I think Afghans are something like 20 times more likely to be arrested for child abuse than white men, white Britons. Then the counter narrative to that would be to say, oh yes, but 80% of all child sexual abuse comes about from white men, and there are many, many, many times more white men in jail for it than there are Afghans. And of course, that's true, but we're going by the percentage of the population here, aren't we? Of course, 80% of people in jail are going to be white because 80% of the population are white. But if only 0.5% of the population are Afghan and 2% of the population, 2% of the prison population are Afghans for child sexual offences, then they are 400% times more likely to be involved in it. I'm not a mathematician, but I think you can see the way that you frame this information can change the conclusion that you get from it. It might be the same facts, but you could get a different conclusion from it. And what they're saying is that people that have a different conclusion from the facts than they do, they are peddling disinformation, and that's not accurate. They may have a different opinion, but it's not disinformation because it's based on the same facts. Are they claiming that the conclusion is false? I mean, they should say they're coming to a different conclusion, or we disagree with their conclusion, but they shouldn't be calling it disinformation because it's not disinformation if they're using the same facts. Civil servants received new resist framework guidance last month, which tells them to keep tabs on social media posts that convey high-risk narratives. And what they mean there by high-risk, high risk of what? Well, the advice cites recent concerns about community housing, which it says create a risk for new migrants and specific ethnic demographics. And this term high-risk, it reminds me of when I was in prison. They decided that I was a very high risk to refugees and illegal immigrants, and there was a serious risk of harm or a very high risk of serious harm occurring to them if I was to be in the same room as them. I mean, absolutely ludicrous. I don't wish harm upon anybody. What they were referring to there is simply the things that I talk about they believe would be harmful for illegal immigrants to hear. I don't think they would be harmful for them to hear. Obviously, when I'm talking about the increased crime rate, I'm not saying that every illegal immigrant is a child rapist. I'm saying that there is a disproportionate number of them are. I'm saying that that among them, there is more likely to be somebody who may carry that out than among, say, 20 white people in a hotel. If you've got 20 illegal immigrants in a hotel, I mean, I don't know what the sort of numbers that they keep in these hotels. Let's say there's 50. And let's say two of them carry out an attack on school children. Well, if you were to get 50 white people in a hotel, it's not going to be two of them that carry out an attack on school children, are there? Otherwise, you would have attacks on school children occurring outside all the hotels that people stay in for their holidays. The advice cites recent concerns about community housing. So when people are concerned about these hotels, and they say that we're concerned that there's going to be a higher risk of these crimes taking place, that is a risk for the new migrants. Not that it's a risk for the people that live there to actually have these migrants living in the hotels there, but that it's a risk for the new migrants that somebody might be critical of the government policy. It also flags online content that could affect public debate on major issues through polarisation. So what they're flagging up there is anything can affect public debate, can't it? But what they're doing there, they're narrowing it down and saying that it's through polarisation. So if your view is the opposite to the government, that's polarisation. If your view is different to the government, then they would say that that was polarising because you're not coming out with the same view as them. So if you're putting facts and statistics online which counter this idea that it's the migrants that are at risk from the indigenous population rather than the other way around, then you're going to be flagged up and they're going to say you're trying to polarise people, you're trying to incite hate by pointing out these facts and statistics, which to them is far worse than raping and killing people, is inciting hate. The advice was issued during the summer's migrant hotel protests, which erupted after a 14-year-old girl was sexually assaulted by Ethiopian asylum seeker Hadish Kabatu in Epping. And we all know about this Ethiopian asylum seeker because the prison let him go. Then he was on the run for 2 or 3 days. And eventually now I think he's been sent back to Ethiopia with a handful of cash, of course, as well. They bribed him to not cause a fuss when he was on the plane. Now, at the time when this happened, the people that were protesting against what had happened, that this 14-year-old girl had been sexually assaulted, they were accused of being far right. They were accused of making this up. They were talking heads on the BBC and on GB News. GB News does interview left-wing types as well as right-wing types. And they were saying that this is all made up and migrants aren't a risk to the children in the town. And quite clearly they were a risk here because one of them carried out this sexual assault and he was found guilty for it. Just in the article that we were talking about yesterday or the day before, there was an Afghan that had been caught abducting and raping more than one child. And he had a friend with him in the house of multiple occupancy that was helping him do this. And we covered that here. So clearly it does happen. If we've got the same thing happening, I would say at least once a week, there's a report of a sexual assault against a child that can be traced back to a man of migrant background in a hotel. If you were to actually include everybody that's of a migrant background, you'd probably say, well, it happens at least daily. And that's the ones that are reported. The ones that aren't reported is probably more than that. And again, I'm going by the statistics here that we can all see. And we should be able to see more of them as well, actually, because they said that, or the government have said that it's mandatory for them to record the ethnicity now of these offences, and that the public should be told about this. And I think they said that because they think that it will show that white people vastly disproportionately carry out these offences rather than men of migrant background. But as I say, that's only the case if you're looking as a whole, if you're not actually looking at the percentage of the population that they are. This was handed out to civil servants. This advice was handed out to civil servants after the GCS signed a £36,000 deal with Storitzi, which helps companies to monitor social media content. Storitzi is that other organisation that says that NGOs are reliable sources of information. And it uses AI as well to work out what is the disinformation and what isn't. And if you've got all the mainstream media companies saying that something is disinformation, quite clearly it isn't, like what happened with the Donald Trump speech, this Storitzi are going to be going along with the mainstream media narrative. They're not going to be speaking the truth. So they claim to be isolating disinformation, but what they're really doing is they're enforcing the government's view of things on everyone. Council officials have also been told to monitor for social media for posts that spread concerns surrounding migrants, even if they are legitimate concerns. Council officials are still going to monitor it. It's what's really disproportionate about this is that all the concern is about the migrants, and there is no concern whatsoever for the people that live in these areas. I haven't once heard the government talk about the danger that it is for the people that live in these areas and that something needs to be done about it. The concern is always that we have to stop the people that are complaining about it, or the people that are trying to do something about it by protesting against it. The Local Government Association's guidance, which includes anonymized case studies, instructs officials on how to push back against information concerning the arrival of asylum seekers settling in hotels and vacant military bases. Well, in a lot of cases, the local government councillors are against this as well, because they know what's likely to happen. So they will try to protest against this. Like the hotel in Epping, the councillor there took the government to court, and they won at first. And the hotel was told that you can't keep asylum seekers there because it's a change of use. And everyone was cheering and saying, oh, this is great, we can now get them out of these hotels. Only then the High Court of Appeal overturned it and said, no, it's fine for them to keep them in hotels. Another part of this is that the government have said, we've listened to what you've said, and we know you don't want us to put them in these hotels, so we're going to take them out of hotels. And of course, they don't then tell you the second bit. We're going to take them out of hotels, and we're going to put them in houses of multiple occupancy. So they're still going to be here. It's just that instead of being in the hotels, they're going to be in the houses that young people, young British people, British citizens would otherwise be able to rent. So it means it's going to tighten the rent market. It means that rents are going to go up, and it means that there's going to be less places for people to stay. And it still means that there's going to be exactly the same danger of the increased crime that comes with these illegal immigrants, whether they're in a hotel, whether they're in a house of multiple occupancy, whether they're in a council house. The people that live there are still going to be living at an increased risk of sexual attacks on the children. And that is the main concern about this. And of course, I'm not saying that every one of these illegal immigrants is a child abuser or a rapist. I'm just saying that there is more likely to be one among them than there is among the general population. And you're more likely to get these offences taking place against children where these hotels are. The Local Government Association's guidance also guides the officials on how to counter concerns about the sudden closure of the town's hotel to accommodate asylum seekers. And you know what? How they're going to counter these concerns? They're going to say, oh, it's only a minimum amount of crime that takes place, and most of these are unfounded accusations, and white people are more likely to do this. White people, 80% of the people in prisons are there, or they're actually white, so they're more likely to carry out these crimes. They will use every disingenuous way they can think of to manipulate the facts to come to conclusions that are beneficial to the government's migration policy. The advice has offered several methods to councils on how to deal with disinformation. These suggestions include establishing cohesion forums. I wonder what that is. I should imagine what that is let's get all the Stand Up to Anti-Racism, let's all get the Unite Union members, let's all get the anti-racists, and we'll set up a forum for them, and we'll fund it by local government, and we'll get them to arrange to go and counter-protest anybody that's actually protesting about the young girls getting raped. Which is what happens. You see Stand Up to Racism at all of these protests where people are protesting where a young girl has been sexually assaulted or raped in the community outside one of these migrant hotels. And all the lefties will be there calling them fascists with their signs, smash the far right, basically saying that we ought to smash the people that are trying to stop this from happening. Smash the victims, effectively. The suggestions include pre-bunking, which warns people about incorrect information they may see in the future. So when people go on these forums, they will be telling them, look, you may see crime statistics showing that illegal immigrants disproportionately carry out these crimes. Well, this isn't true because we've got you there. White people are more likely to carry out these crimes because 80% of the people in the jails are white. Well, that's because 80% of the country is white. As I say, they will use disingenuous ways of getting around this. It's the same when they tried doing a study into sexual abuse, the original child sexual abuse, the original grooming gang study. And when they did that, they expanded it so that it didn't just look at grooming gangs and the grooming gang phenomena, so that it looked at child sexual abuse right the way across the board. And of course, because 80% of the population are white, then they're going to say, well, the majority of these people that were involved in this were actually white. But if you narrow that down and don't just say, well, all child sexual abuse, if you say the grooming gang phenomenon, then you'll find that the vast majority of the people involved in the grooming gangs were not white. I mean, the vast majority of them were also Muslim, and a disproportionate number of them were also Pakistani. And again, this is an issue which happens all the way across Europe. You'll find that a disproportionate number of the grooming gangs in Holland are Moroccan. You'll find a disproportionate number of the grooming gangs in Finland are Somalian. You know, these issues aren't just happening in Britain. They're happening all the way across Europe. They're happening wherever you have a large percentage of Muslims, because among that group, among that people group, there will be men that are susceptible to forming grooming gangs. And that's, you know, unfortunately, that's just the case. And we shouldn't be too frightened to say this. And again, I have to say, I'm not saying that all Muslims are involved in grooming gangs. I met Muslims in prison who absolutely condemned it. In fact, anyone in prison that was a child abuser was in danger if the normal general population got hold of them. And that goes the same for whatever type of pedophile they are. So I'm not saying that all Muslims are involved in that, but a certain number of them are. It's a phenomena that is associated with that people group. If we didn't have that people group in this country, that phenomena would not be here and none of those young girls would have been raped. And that's the fact of the matter. And the reason they were raped is because our government brought those people over here against the wishes of the population. I should add, the people that are to blame are the government. They know what these people groups have a reputation for in their own countries. It's not like the British government doesn't have its spies out in these countries. They knew full well what went on in places like Pakistan and India and Africa, and yet they still imported these people into our country, which is the source of these problems. You can't say blame it on the people themselves, because they wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for our government. The warnings dished out to local authorities came just weeks after it was revealed that there are 32,000 illegal migrants in Britain staying in hotels paid for by taxpayers. Reform UK Chief Whip Lee Anderson said, "This government has allowed the largest invasion of our shores in modern history. It deserves full scrutiny, and the British people have every right to do so." Now, it is interesting that it is now being referred to as an invasion. In my trial, in one of the podcasts that I was accused of inciting hate with, I had referred to it as an invasion, and I referred to them as invaders. And this was picked up on by the prosecution. But in that same week, Suella Braverman, the Home Secretary, she used that language as well. And the left were furious about it. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at the numbers, then yes, it is the same as a large-scale invasion. If you're just looking at numbers, are they invading with weapons and guns? And no, of course not. What's being referred to is the number of people is the equivalent of an invasion. And not just the illegal immigration. If you consider that Britain is only about 30%, London rather, our capital city is only about 30% white British now, then it's legal migration is just as bad as illegal migration. In actual fact, legal immigration has a far larger number of people. And if you're talking about a new people replacing the old people and saying that's the equivalent of an invasion, then you should really be able to refer to the legal migrants as an invasion, as well as the illegal. Lee Anderson continued, "This is a nation that has led the world in free speech for hundreds of years. It is a tragedy to see this Labour government bringing that to an end." Well, hang on a minute, Lee. Weren't you also part of the Conservative government? And didn't these laws come in under the Conservative government? They certainly did nothing to overturn them. When they came into office, they made full use of them to silence critics of their policies, exactly the same as the Labour Party makes full use of them to silence critics of their policies. He said, "We must return to a government that serves the best interests of its citizens and does not penalise them for speaking their minds. Only reform will make that a reality." Well, I hope and pray that reform do make that a reality and protect free speech in this country. And I hope it isn't just a certain type of free speech. I hope it's genuine free speech, which includes criticism of Israeli policy in it. And doesn't say, oh, well, that's anti-Semitism. A government spokesman said, "We are committed to protecting people online while upholding freedom of expression to ensure the internet does not serve as a haven for those looking to spread harm, both online and offline." And I don't see how the government is upholding freedom of expression when it's paying people to monitor social media posts. And if they say anything that could be classed as insulting, they're getting them arrested, trying to intimidate them into being silent and stopping their criticism of the government. That's not upholding freedom of expression. And they continued bringing up the Online Safety Act, saying the Online Safety Act introduces clear duties on platforms to tackle illegal content and content harmful to children, including false and misleading information that can cause real world harm. And of course, that's the same as disinformation, isn't it? Saying that somebody who disagrees with the government are using false and misleading information. And it's not just tackling illegal content. It's got this legal but harmful content that they decide is harmful. They decide that anyone that's speaking the truth about things, about subjects that the government don't want people to talk about, then they will say that that's harmful. They define it as being harmful to migrants to talk about the increase in crimes that have happened in these areas that the government have put them into hotels. They'll say that that's harmful to migrants, or just harmful to children, for them to be warned about what may happen to them on the way home from school if they're attacked by some of these illegal immigrants who have certainly don't have the best wishes of the children on their mind. Companies must assess the risks on their platforms and put in place the appropriate protection for users, helping to protect democratic debate and public safety online. So, and what they mean there is we're going to fine companies if they don't take down posts that we disagree with. Not take down posts that are illegal, but take down posts that the government disagree with and think that because they disagree with it, it's therefore going to cause harm. See, this is all about harm avoidance. The government think that they are protecting people here. They think they're protecting the migrants from hearing things that might hurt their feelings. And that's the most important thing. It's not important to the government to protect the children from that area. Of course, they say that it's terrible that this has happened when something atrocious does happen. You know, the fact is it all could have been prevented, couldn't it? If the government didn't have such a lax migration policy, all of this could have been prevented. We could have had the same as white Australia did in Australia in the 70s. We could have just kept the country as it was. We could have kept it as it was after World War II, 99.9% white. You know, all of this has happened in the last 70 years. The government has imported all these different peoples into the country, and all these problems have come about because of it. And nationalists the whole time have been trying to speak up about it, draw attention to it. And all the way through, the government has been finding ways to silence them, whether it's through legal means or like this now, where we're paying people to define what is disinformation and what is information, and paying people to scan through people's social media posts. It's like just opening people's mail and reading them, or listening in on people's phone calls and then flagging them up if you think they're saying something that's critical of the government. It's just as bad as living in what we were told Soviet Russia was like, isn't it, really? And this, again, this is the sort of thing that the US State Department is talking about, as I mentioned in the podcast on Monday, that they're drawing attention to. This clampdown on free speech, this is the real threat to democracy. It's not Russia. It's this. It's this snooping on the citizens of the country and preventing them from speaking their views if they happen to be disagreeable to the government. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.